Kettle, and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've sent me in the comments section of my Critical Q&A videos, or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. Things are really exciting right now. It is the holiday season, and in fact, this show, this next week, is Christmas. So I wanted to wish everybody a happy holidays, a Merry Christmas, happy Kwanzaa, joyful Hanukkah, whatever is your holiday greeting of choice. I hope you have a great one. I truly wish you the best. And, in coming into preparations for this new year. Good news is that if all goes well, I will have my book published by New Year's. All engines are going in that direction right now. So I'm throwing that out there as a release date, and I think it's actually going to happen. And I'm very, very excited about that. And other than that, I think we should just get on with your questions because I've got a lot to take up this week. And here we go. Ace Vitura. My question has to do with the comments that you have made throughout your Q&A sessions about the Church of Scientology, in particular, with the downfall of the Church. I think that the only way to have any real hope of a real soon solution is to have the FBI, CIA, Homeland Security, Raid Big Blue, CC Gold Flag, Free Winds, hard because it's international waters, and CST at the same time, and get all the evidence at once to make any impact. What do you think about this, and what advice do you have so any potential law/department, if they brought to really do something about the Church of Scientology? I think taking on something like the Church of Scientology is a fairly massive operation. And the like was done in the mid-1970s when the FBI was tipped off by the Church, the Church's clumsy efforts in getting information out of the government and their infiltration of the government. That tipped off the FBI, which then led to, a big raid on Church headquarters, both in the United States and Canada, and that was a very big operation. And from that, they netted a lot of evidence that they wouldn't have otherwise had in terms of documents incriminating the Church of Scientology and a number of schemes and plans and illegal operations that it had been involved in for years, the Guardian's office specifically. Now, if you were going to do something like that now, then I think you would net the same kind of evidence. But getting an operation like that mounted has been proven very, very difficult. There are, for whatever reasons within the FBI, the CIA is, by the way, not something that's going to take on the Church of Scientology. It's illegal for the CIA to be engaging in domestic operations, as far as I know, from my limited knowledge of that sort of thing. And I don't know that Homeland Security is going to take on the Church of Scientology. I don't know that they consider it a terrorist organization. Certainly not a violent one, in terms of actually committing, terrorist operations on American soil. It's not really what the Church of Scientology is doing or what they're about. Their operations are much more psychological, mental in nature. Now, as far as, the FBI going in there, well, we know that there were operations that they're being looked at to do exactly that. And they got cut off, according to what I've read and been told. Those operations were stopped from a very high level. And it's not just the Church of Scientology that's happened with in terms of destructive cults. Political influence and political games and power and whatnot have a lot to do with this. So, and of course that goes back to money and all kinds of things. So I don't know how realistic it is to even expect or think that something like that's going to happen. But if it did, I mean, I would have hours of advice for law enforcement officials, so I can't just summarize that here. There's so much to talk about, but I would definitely think that a simultaneous, raid on the gold base in Hemet, the Hollywood Guarantee Building in Hollywood, California, and the CST places, the Church of Spiritual Technology, in other words, the place where the vaults are, with the hidden vaults underground, where they're putting all of Hubbard's words onto titanium plates and all of his recorded words onto gold discs, gold records, and preserving this stuff in case of nuclear annihilation. I think there's probably more at those locations than is known about, maybe in terms of money or documents or information. You know, it's anybody's guess, really. I'm just totally, you know, shooting in the, you know, in the dark on that. But if I were Scientology and I wanted to hide something, that's where I'd hide it, you know, is on those CST locations. So those would be places I would want to arrange to send raids to as well. So that's where I would go. And of course, but the problem with that is, you know, you need to have incriminating evidence in order to arrange something like that, in order to go find more incriminating evidence. And as far as I know, Scientology is pretty good at hiding that kind of evidence. So, you know, it's a common question, it's a common refrain, you know, something should be done about this, they should go in there, they should do something about it. And I agree, they should. But, you know, getting that simple statement, they should do something like that, into execution is a very difficult and time-consuming process. And you'd think there'd be plenty of evidence out there on this, but you find when you start digging in that, you know, it's a far cry from, you know, an individual's anecdotal story, or many individuals and their anecdotal stories, what they experienced, and proving that to a judge that there's criminal activity going on to the point where they'll issue a warrant to go search property. There's a big gap between those two things. And so we, you know, cross our fingers, hope for the best that those gaps are being filled, that people, enough people coming forward and providing real tangible evidence of wrongdoing on the part of the church will eventually result in those kind of raids. Julia Ward. I never knew that the method of rote memorization you described was A, called Chinese school, B, a cult technique, or C, foreign to most people. I was taught that way in school for everything, from grammar lists, prepositions, being, verbs, etc., to Bible verses. I went to a fundamental Christian school which taught a lot of propaganda-like theories, which I always questioned and received negative responses for doing. It has always confused me that my teachers were so defensive and refused to discuss doctrines or other faiths. It shows an insecurity in one's own faith to turn a blind eye to different opinions. Do you think that insecurity in belief could be one reason why Scientologists are so closed-minded? In your experience, is there something that can be done to help someone so engrossed in any one way of thinking to learn to think critically? I would certainly agree that closed-mindedness would come from, or one source of that could certainly be fear. You know, there's a thing called cognitive dissonance. We talk about it a lot because it has a lot to do with the mental gyrations that people experience when they're confronted with information that is contrary to core beliefs or ideas that they already hold. And what they tend to do with those new ideas that come in is reject them or twist them or alter them in order to fit their own preconceived ideas. That's just a common reaction to cognitive dissonance, that uncomfortable feeling that they get. It doesn't have to be that way, and if a person's trained critically to think critically or logically or with more reason, then they might recognize that uncomfortableness is coming from this conflict of ideas, and they might actually adjust their core beliefs to more fit, you know, this new idea that's coming in, if this new idea is proved to be more reliable, accurate, or reasonable than what the idea they were already holding on to was. But that's the battle, that's the fight we have psychologically with people who are in destructive cults, is they have totally, we call it, you know, they're drinking the Kool-Aid, right? They've totally bought into these ideas, and they hold onto them very, very tightly. Not just in destructive cults, of course, this is common across religious ideas and religious beliefs. It's also extremely, extremely problematic when you're talking about politics or social issues. People get very, very, they really hold on to these core beliefs they have to the point where they're unwilling to engage or look at other ideas. From my own experience, it took, a jarring jolt of reality to challenge those core beliefs that I had in terms of Scientology, and it took years of seeing that things were not in accord with those ideas before it started finally getting through to me that those beliefs that I was holding so tightly to were not in fact true or were even rational or reasonable. I needed hard physical evidence of that in my face over and over again before I finally started breaking down those walls. So, you know, a single conversation, debates, multiple conversations are, you know, only chipping away at those beliefs or at the foundations of those beliefs. And it takes, I think, a lot of work to overcome those kind of things. So, you know, it's you got to prepare for that in terms of how do you challenge someone's beliefs on this. You have to really find out what is it about those beliefs that the person is holding on to that they find so certain or so sure. What do they, maybe there's a problem that that person has that those beliefs solve. Or maybe they were raised with those beliefs and so they've really never had any other fundamental worldview or outlook on life. And so you're, you know, when you challenge those kind of things, you're just challenging core beliefs that the person has that he's just never been able to conceive of another way of looking at things. And maybe if you were to say, well, look, if you could somehow present it in such a way of, could you imagine that, you know, maybe instead of this thing always being blue, that it could possibly in some bizarre way be red. You know, just maybe, just a kind of, you know, craziest idea ever, I know, but let's just try to entertain it for a minute. You know, that sort of, maybe, you know, make it very safe for the person to imagine or look at something differently than the way they've always been looking at it or the way they think it should be, right? Without threatening or antagonizing or in any way making them feel like they need to be defensive about their position. I think that's important. I don't always practice that, of course. You know, sometimes I get very, like, about things because of course, I feel strongly about things. And so you get these, you know, these clashes. But that's a struggle of life. So, you know, to bring it back to your question, yes, I think fear could drive some of that unwillingness to look at another idea or belief because they fear that they will have to change their mind. Yes, that could definitely be a factor. And also just people's need to be right, you know, that can also enter into it. So I think there's a number of factors there. Now, V Darkroom, Chris, what are your thoughts on hate groups such as the KKK and the Westboro Baptist Church? I definitely wouldn't say that people in those groups are critical thinkers by any stretch, but I'd like to hear what you think. What do you think drives such groups to hate who they hate? Is it confirmation bias? Could it be conspiracy theory oriented? Is it scapegoating? Is it something else entirely? I'm answering this question literally the same day that I have put up a podcast addressing these exact issues, actually. And there are a number of contributing factors to why people like the KKK and the Westboro Baptist Church and other destructive cults get into a very hateful frame of mind. Almost all of those techniques are propaganda techniques. They were well known to the Nazi Party, they're well known to destructive cult leaders, and they are well known to media outlets such as Fox News, which was the subject of the podcast that I just did with my friend Ruth. There was an excellent article that broke down a number of propaganda tools that are thought-stopping mind manipulation tools that are used, scapegoating, the whole creating an us versus them mentality, right? Outright use of lies, generating confusion by speaking in generalities and leading a person into a confused frame of mind where they come to a conclusion that you want them to come to without you necessarily having to put that conclusion out there to start with. There's all kinds of tools that are used in order to create fear and hatred. Hatred comes from fear, I think, personally. I think that's where it comes from. This idea of otherness. You know, you have this this us versus them mentality created, and many, many, many groups do this. It's what drives sports, you know, my team versus your team, and you know, and the conflict of it, right? And when it can remain good-natured, and when you know that it's just a game, it's not a problem. But when it ceases to be a game and it starts taking on serious overtones and violent rhetoric enters in, now you're starting to cross lines that you shouldn't be crossing because you're really just talking about different ideas, right? Or in the case of racism and bigotry and you know, misogyny and things like that, almost all of that is based on false information and false ideals that are that come from various sources, you know. And it's really hard to police, especially in a free society where freedom of speech is the order of the day. You want people to be able to express their opinions, voice their ideas, make their arguments, and do so in a fair and balanced way. Fox News and similar media outlets, and pretty much, I mean, I have to be honest, all media outlets to one degree or another engage in these techniques. They have a bias, they have an opinion, they have an idea, and very rarely are they putting forward simply a news story. This is what happened, you know, on March 13th, 2006, you know, Joe Blow was walking across the street and got hit by a car. That's the event. That's what happened. That's all that happened. But now we're going to start using rhetoric and imagery to paint maybe the driver or Joe in a certain light to make you feel that you're on the driver's side or you're on Joe's side. Maybe Joe, you know, maybe you can paint that story in such a way that Joe had it coming. He was that stupid moron was jaywalking, and he should have seen that car coming, and he just stepped out in the middle of the road, and of course he deserved to be hit by a car. Well, I don't think anybody deserves to be hit by a car. So, you know, that now you're, but you get the point that now you're painting that event in a particular light in order to get people thinking a particular way, right? The truth of the matter could have been that the person who was driving the car was talking on their cell phone, was distracted in such a way that they weren't even looking at the road when Joe stepped out and got hit. That could be, that's an objective, factual statement of what happened. The driver was not looking at the road when Joe stepped out in the road, and so the driver had no chance to avoid hitting Joe. Joe did not cause that accident to occur all by himself, at least, right? But it could be painted in such a way that it could look like that. And that's media bias. That happens all day, every day. And it doesn't just happen on Fox News, but of course I used Fox News as an example of that because they're so blatant in the way that they twist and paint stories. And it's very obvious to see, so they were an easy example to use. So that's how I think hate groups, getting back to this, are spread. That's how I think that there's those ideas are spread, is through painting people of color, women, people, anybody outside of that hate group, anybody who's not KKK, anybody who's not a Westboro Baptist is an evil, bad, horrible person who needs to be dealt with. And that's how those groups think, that's how they operate, and that's how they teach their members to operate. And of course, that's of course how Scientology operates too. Kath T. Hi Chris, thanks for your great videos. I'd be interested in hearing more specifics about how you got into critical thinking. You've said that you started reading Carl Sagan, but I'd be interested in the moment, if you remember it, that you began to know that you lacked critical thinking skills or weren't using them. Did you read a blog post somewhere where someone mentioned that they had learned to think critically by reading authors such as Carl Sagan? Did you go to a lecture where someone talked about the need to develop critical thinking or what? Thanks. Yeah, I'll tell you exactly the moment it happened. I was actually, I think it was August of 2013, and I was sitting at my computer, and I had decided that, you know, having read all this information about Scientology and knowing that it was now something I could no longer believe in and I couldn't follow anymore because I learned that Hubbard was a pathological liar and a serial plagiarist and had just, you know, that Scientology was not at all what it said it was, I knew that I was no longer part of this destructive cult mentality. And I didn't, and I told myself, I do not want to go from one cult into another. I don't want, but I have to decide, what am I going to believe? What am I going to think? How am I going to approach life now? You know, I don't believe in Thetans anymore. I don't believe that, you know, I mean, Do I believe we're immortal spiritual beings? Do I? What about psychiatry? What about homosexuality? What about these like really strong issues that Scientology makes? What about those things? I have to reevaluate all of this. And it was very, you know, everything was kind of up in the air. And I get on the internet, and I actually, exactly what happened was, I saw, I think I looked under skepticism. Somehow skepticism had come across my plate. Maybe along the line, maybe when I was reading about Scientology, somebody said something about skepticism or had used the phrase critical thinking. And I didn't really understand what that was, right? So I Googled skepticism, and what came up was skeptic.com and a video from Penn and Teller. Now, I didn't know anything about Penn and Teller or James Randi or Carl Sagan or the skeptical movement or the atheists or Richard Dawkins or any of this stuff. I didn't know about any of it. But I knew who Penn and Teller was because they were magicians, and they were funny, and I'd laughed at them in the past because I'd seen their performances and I really liked them. And I went, Penn and Teller skepticism? What is this? And I did, because I had never connected those two magicians with skepticism or logic or reason. So I looked at the video, and it was Penn Jillette talking about James Randi. Never heard of James Randi. So I look up James Randi. And James Randi is this very famous skeptic who had been a magician who was talking about critical thinking. And he badmouthed Hubbard, and he badmouthed psychics and ESP. And I read about the James Randi $1 million challenge. And I was just fascinated by this. I thought this was fascinating. And there was a quote from Carl Sagan about belief and about science. And I started reading what Carl Sagan had to say about science and how science is not a system of belief, and science is not a just the scientific method. It's a way of thinking. It's a way of looking at information and making determinations and judgments on that information based on the scientific method. And what I came across right away with Carl Sagan was something called the Baloney Detection Kit. And this was a chapter in the book, The Demon-Haunted World. Science as a light or a candle in the darkness of ignorance, right? This is the name of this book. Never heard of it before. I knew about Carl Sagan from Cosmos, you know, billions and billions of stars. You know, that was all I knew about Carl Sagan. And suddenly, I'm reading these quotes from him and this baloney detection kit. I read the steps of this baloney detection kit, and I thought, holy shit. This is exactly what I'm looking for, because it's not another cult system. It's not somebody telling me how the world is or what to think. It's giving me tools I can use to evaluate for myself what to think. And I loved that. And so it was perfect timing to run into that. So I bought The Demon-Haunted World and I read it. And it was probably one of the best books I've ever read. Laughed a lot of the way through it. Of course, related everything to Scientology. And of course, if I read it now, I'd probably get a whole lot more out of it. But at the time, it was really, really good for stripping out a lot of stuff that Scientology had given me or that Hubbard had laid in that were sort of landmines against critical thinking. And Sagan breaks it all down, and he's a brilliant writer. And so that's what set me on the road to critical thinking and made me feel like this was a subject I needed to know a lot more about. This was a subject I wanted to get behind. And the whole field of skepticism and critical thinking were something that I could embrace and use to rid myself of all of the destructive cult landmines that Hubbard had planted all around in my brain. And I've been using that ever since, much to my benefit. Jonathan Mark, I have noticed that many of those in Scientology promos have Russian accents. Are Russians joining Scientology so that they can come to the U.S.? Is Scientology engaging in immigration fraud? Yes, Scientology is very actively recruiting Russians into the Sea Organization and bringing them to the United States. They've been doing that for a number of years. They've been doing that with other Europeans as well. Hungarians, met a lot of Hungarians in Scientology. worked with them. Hungarians are amazingly hard workers, and I imagine Russians are too. I think Russians were more common in Flag, in Clearwater, than they were in Los Angeles, but I met my share of Russian Scientologists there. This was happening over the last few years that I was in Scientology, so I think I first noticed it maybe around 2009, 2008, something like that. I think that's when Scientology started getting, you know, bigger in Russia. They opened up the Moscow Church Scientology and started recruiting and getting a lot of, it was very popular there. And so that's where a lot of these recruits came from. I can't speak to immigration fraud. I don't know enough about it to know whether what Scientology is doing with this is fraudulent or not. But I do know that they're bringing over, or had brought over, a lot of Russians and put them in the Sea Organization and got them over here. And I think some of those Russians have probably looked at that as a way out of Russia and into the United States. And they're right.
Chris Wood. Greetings, Mr. Shelton. I remembered something this week that you might be able to shed some light on. About 12 years ago, I lived in a major metropolitan area here in Texas and listened to an FM talk station practically nonstop. The weekend programming was usually low-quality guest-hosted shows. One Sunday late in the evening, I actually heard a Scientology talk show. I'm not kidding here, they said they were Scientologists speaking about Scientology. They even had some callers. I do remember them talking about life traumas. The one example of a trauma that I do remember the female host talking about was an expecting mother running into a door, knob, or wall by accident would cause a trauma for the fetus inside of her. This trauma could then be dealt with in Scientology. Bear in mind that I only heard this show once that one Sunday. After that, I never heard the show again, and I remained a listener of that station for some time. My questions are these. Do you know about stuff like this going during your tenure in Scientology? If you did know, how involved were you? If this stuff still goes on, what other types of media are Scientologists involved with?
Okay, this is actually really easy to answer because I wasn't directly involved with this radio show or anything like that when I was in Scientology, but Scientologists will use any media outlet they can, which will definitely forward their positive message. And if they think that they're not going to be painted in a good light or given what they would call a fair shake, in other words, only their viewpoint is presented, they're not going to be so willing to do that media or go on that show or be part of that experience because they don't want to be questioned too closely. They want to have control of the message. It's all about information control. And they're not into being debated because they can't stand up to a debate. They're not good at rhetoric or reason or critical thinking for obvious reasons. So you'll find, like, for example, recently in Utah, in Salt Lake City, I think within about a month ago, there was a very positive puff piece put out on Scientology, which the Salt Lake City Church had set up with the local media there in Salt Lake. And they got this really nice story put out on the media by them. And that was because they let that happen because they were able to control all the information, which is why it came out as a puff piece. Anytime that there's anything, any media interested in Scientology or wanting to talk to Scientologists or debate Scientologists or get them on a show, say, with me or with Mike Rinder or, you know, Mark Headley or Marty Rathbun or any prominent critic, they won't do it. Scientologists won't engage because they don't want to be challenged and they don't want things coming up that they don't want to be able to control the answers on. And so even when the show has callers, they'll filter those callers so that only positive type commenters or callers are coming through, which they can use to forward their message and not have to deal with challenges to their message. And that's how they do media. So you'll find that sort of thing going on. And when you do, know that they're not interested in being challenged or questioned very closely. Time for flash answers. J.B. Hickok, may the force be with you. A question, do you think that there is some inner circle of Scientologists around David Miscavige who are in on Scientology being a money-making scam and willingly work for / collaborate with him to bilk the true believers, or do you think he is more of a lone operator? From what I know of the man, he does not seem like the kind who play well with others, but what I know is limited. There is not anybody I know of within the Scientology world who is aware of the fact that it's a money-making scam. I do believe David Miscavige thinks that. I don't think he's a true believer. And I think that he probably has people in an inner circle who are not Scientologists, such as some of the tax attorneys who work for the church. I think they're in on it. But I don't know that they talk about it a lot. I don't think they sit there and, you know, twirl their mustaches and I don't think it's quite like that. I think they all just sort of collect their money and get on with their lives, right? And David Miscavige is just kind of doing his thing. So I think it's a lone operation sort of thing with him. And you know, if somebody else were to take over Scientology, they could be a true believer. You know, it doesn't have to be the way that it is, right? It just happens to be that L. Ron Hubbard was scamming people, and David Miscavige took over, and he's scamming people. And that's how it is right now. I'm not saying that Scientology is always going to be that way or has to be that way. A true believer who really believes in Scientology's methods and techniques could run that operation. And I think it would look quite different if somebody who actually believed in Scientology did run it. Because I think that the policies and rules and things they would do would be quite different from what David Miscavige does. So that would be an interesting conversation, a whole different topic. But anyway, in answer to the question, David Miscavige is a lone operator. Jennifer Isaacs, do you plan a movie review on the new Star Wars soon? It was amazing. It was incredible. I loved it. It was awesome. If you haven't seen it, run, don't walk to the theater and check it out. No spoilers, that's all I'm saying. Have a good time. Ramona Dunn, what do Scientologists think about killing animals for human consumption? I believe that most animals are slaughtered by people that aren't involved in the church, so wouldn't it be considered as wog food to Scientologists? Maybe a stupid question, but isn't it unhealthy for a Scientologist to eat an animal which hasn't reached the state of clear, as the animal is suffering and is being traumatized before slash while being killed? No. And I think, Ramona, you might want to find out a little bit more about Dianetics and Scientology and what it's all about, because Scientology addresses itself to people and not to animals, not in any way, shape, or form. Scientology believes in the human spirit and not the dog spirit. There's no spiritual existence, particularly with animals, that Scientologists get into. You know, a random Scientologist might think that there's a Thetan inhabiting their cat or their pet or their dog or something. But in terms of animals at large, that's not really how they think, and they don't have anything about eating slaughtered food or eating meat or anything like that. AJ Alvin, 2012. I've been wondering if anybody has heard David Miscavige make any comments about the Going Clear book / film. Also, do you think he's probably a complete psychopath? I've not heard any direct feedback from David Miscavige about Going Clear, but I think most of the propaganda that has been put out against Alex Gibney, Lawrence Wright, or any of the people who were in Going Clear was written by David Miscavige, that is my opinion, or crafted by people in the Office of Special Affairs and approved by him. So I think that we've heard David Miscavige's opinion about Going Clear quite vividly and repeatedly in any Scientology response to that film. And as far as whether he's a psychopath, and so we come to the end of another critical Q&A episode. This has been fun, and I hope that the answers I gave were interesting and informative. Again, I would like to reiterate that I hope you guys have a great Christmas and a wonderful holiday season. And I hope you are seeing your family and friends and just sort of basking in the glory of the holiday season. I am, and I'm having a great time with it, and I am really looking forward to Christmas this year and New Year's and whatnot. So until next week, thank you very much for coming by and listening to what I have to say, and I'll see you again soon.